I would like to read to you from the Turbo Diaries and explain how applications can gain control and benefit from frequency scaling. Modern multi-core processors are equipped with dynamic voltage and frequency scaling. So instead of running all the cores at a constant clock rate, they can adapt to the current load by changing the frequency of the cores. Traditionally, this is used to save energy. So we reduce the voltage and the frequency when the load is low, or we can boost a subset of the cores in order to speed up sequential bottlenecks or peak loads. Today, we want to investigate if we can make these frequency scaling techniques available to software such that they can improve their performance by exposing their asymmetric properties. To that extent, I first want to highlight some of the implementation details of DVFS, and then study how these implementations can be used. So what are the properties they have? So there are latencies that are introduced due to frequency scaling, and also what are the power implications. Finally, I want to introduce a library that allows the programmatic access to frequency scaling, such that we can control it from within applications. In the core of DVFF implementations are P states and C states. P states are performance states, so they are predefined frequency and voltage pairs. The processors, they support varying numbers of P states, and for simplicity here, we focus only on three of them. P slow runs at the slowest possible frequency and also consumes the least amount of power. P base runs at the base nominal frequency, so as it is specified for the processor. And P turbo runs at the fastest possible frequency, that is typically above the nominal frequency. The operating system can control the P states anywhere between P slow and P turbo, P slow and P base, by using machine-specific registers. So they can be accessed using the privileged read MSR and write MSR instructions. The C states are power states. The only operational C state is C0, and all other C states halt the core and trade increasing entry and wake-up latencies by higher power savings. The operating system can request to halt the core by using the halt or monitor and mwait instructions. For our work, we focus on two DVFS implementations. This is AMD's Turbo Core and Intel's Turbo Boost. On this slide, I want to highlight some of the differences of these implementations. So our AMD Bulldozer Core consists of four modules, and each module consists of two integer cores and a shared floating point unit. So in total, we have eight cores. But they are organized pairwise, so we can control the speed only in these pairs. That means the domain of frequency and voltage is one module, but different modules can run in different P states. The Intel Haswell processor we used has four cores, each supporting hyperthreading. And the main difference to the AMD implementation is that on Intel, all active cores in the C0 state run at the same symmetric frequency. When we want to boost a core, this requires typically that the majority of the other cores is halted in a deeper C state. So this is necessary in order to provide the power and terminal headroom that allows the boosting. The actual decision if the boosted P state gets enabled is for AMD deterministic. So there, the processor only calculates the current power draw. But for Intel, they additionally take the temperature into account. So here, they support a thermal boosting, which makes use of the thermal capacitance of the package. The AMD processor has another important feature for our work, because here, we cannot only assign asymmetric P states to the different modules, but also can gain control over all the P states in software. So what you can do in the end is, instead of halting the majority of the cores, we can keep them running in P slow and let one of the modules run in the boosted P state P turbo. Before we can apply manual frequency scaling, of course, we need to know what the properties are. So how large do portions of the application need to be such that it pays off to implement frequency scaling? We will now study these properties. First, we investigate how it behaves when we do the default automatic frequency scaling. And then we check out what the properties are for manual frequency scaling. For the evaluation, we created a small micro benchmark. So it runs a thread on each of the cores, and the thread continuously tries to execute critical sections. So we create a sequential bottleneck, basically. The critical sections are protected by an MCS queue lock. And what we are finally interested in is how large does the time of the critical section have to grow until it can amortize the cost that we have to introduce for the frequency scaling. To do that, we can decorate the acquire and release functions. So for example, we can request P state transitions or C state transitions in order to trigger the DVFS. In our measurements, we are interested in two numbers. The first one is the effective frequency that we can achieve within the critical section. So here we put the frequency in relation to the time that we actually spend within the critical section at P base and related to the total time that we need to execute the critical section, including all the overheads. For the energy, we take samples of the current configuration of the processor and then multiply this one by the time it actually takes to execute a workload of 1 hour. So schematically, it looks like this. When we have to wait for a lock, we request the operating system to halt the core. So we wait by basically switching off the core. And then when we're allowed to enter the critical section, we got woken up and then hopefully get boosted. All these things are managed automatically by the processor. So it decides how deep we will go into the C state, which depends on how long we wait. So the longer we wait, the more features get power gated, and the more energy we can save. Then in turn, when we execute the critical section, the processor decides if it will enable the boosted P states, so if enough power was saved on the other cores in order to boost the one remaining active core. For the evaluation, we investigate the frequency and the energy, and we do that for varying sizes of the critical section. So here in the plot, we see the effective frequency that was achieved within the critical section and the power that was consumed to execute 1 hour of work inside of critical sections. So what you compare is a decoration that simply spins on the MCS queue lock versus an implementation that uses the futex syscall, so as it is also done using the pthread mutex. For AMD, the critical section needs to have a size of 1.5 million cycles in order to outperform spinning. And for Intel, it requires already 4 million. The drop that we see here in performance, so our explanation is that this results from the processor being required to enter a deeper C state, and this also introduces a higher wake-up latency. For the energy, we are interested how long we have to wait in order to save energy in this situation. And here, the time to wait has to be 7 million cycles. For Intel, it's already more efficient for critical sections that wait only for 70,000 cycles. So when we compare the two different implementations, we can say AMD is a little bit more focused towards performance, whereas the Intel implementation has to focus on energy efficiency or energy savings. Now, our goal is to do frequency scaling manually, So we also need to understand the properties if we explicitly request pstates. So we use the same benchmark, but in this example, we explicitly request when we wait to switch to the pslow pstate. Then we wait by spinning, and when we are allowed to enter the critical section, we request the boosted pstate. In a separate small benchmark, we were interested in what are the latencies that are introduced by requesting these transitions. So there's a constant overhead that gets introduced by switching into the kernel by using the IO control syscall. So this is 1,000 cycles. And then inside the kernel, we request the pstate using the write MSR instruction and measured how much longer it takes from after the request was finished until the entire transition is finished. So when we have a look here at the first transition from pbase to pslow, we see that requesting pslow takes 28,000 cycles. And until the request is finished, it takes only 2,000 cycles more. So and basically, the transition is blocking. When we go towards faster speeds, so here from pslow to pturbo, there the request takes only 2,000 cycles, but then the entire transition takes 225,000 cycles. This is actually not too bad because during that period, the core is already fully operational, and it simply ramps up the frequency until the boosted frequency is achieved. At the end, again, we have a blocking transition back to pbase. Again, we have a look at the frequency and the energy. Here we compare, again, the plain spinning implementation that only has the overheads from acquiring and releasing the logs, and compare it to three different strategies to request the pstates manually. So the first one is, as I just explained, the same thread switches to pslow when we have to wait, and then to pturbo when we enter the critical section. And we try to somewhat evict these high latencies that are introduced by the write MSR instruction by first delegating the write MSR instruction to the other core of the same module. So we use only half the cores for executing the application, and the other half of the cores are only executing the commands for frequency scaling. Or by migrating to a core that is constantly boosted and always executes the critical sections. So when we have a look at the numbers, when the thread itself performs all the frequency transitions, then this outperforms pure spinning already with 600,000 cycles. And the most efficient way is by delegating the transition to the sibling core of the module. And then we can reduce the minimal size of the critical section from which on it makes sense to use frequency scaling down to 200,000 cycles. And you remember from the Futex chart, so here it took us 1.5 million cycles in order to outperform the spinning. So converted to time, this 1.5 million are around 500 microseconds. And here with 200,000 cycles, we're down to 50, so it's an order of magnitude faster. The energy basically is proportional to the efficiency of the transition approaches that we chose. This is simply because the processor always consumes the highest amount of possible power because there's always one core boosted. So the difference is only in the transition strategies. Of course, we would like to apply manual frequency scaling not only to boosting sequential bottlenecks, but also, as I mentioned, that we want to improve the performance of applications such that they can expose their asymmetric properties. Therefore, we implemented a library which is called Turbo. And the goal was that we wanted to have a convenient way to programmatically access the DVFS features. So the actual way to achieve the frequency scaling is not very well documented, and it took us quite a while to get it right. So having such a library should be quite convenient. We also envisioned the library as a testbed, so when new algorithms are designed that target future heterogeneous or asymmetric systems, then the library can also be used to emulate the processor to such a system. The library is designed in layers, so this is for an easy extensibility. And on the lowest level, we have hardware abstractions for the low-level operating system and hardware interfaces. So for example, for the machine-specific registers, for the low-level performance counters. And on top of that, we have a layer for the performance configuration. So here on that layer, we are already independent of the differences of AMD's and Intel's implementation. So here on an abstract layer, we can request P states. We can configure the processor according to the setting that we want to have. And we can also perform profiling of periods, for example, how many cache misses were happening. On the top layer of the library, we have execution control. So here, for example, a lock, as I just explained, is implemented that can be decorated by different transition strategies. Using the library, we also investigated four different use cases and wanted to see, okay, what are the possible benefits or also the limitations of frequency scaling. The goal here is that we want to expose properties of the application that would be otherwise hidden from the operating system or the hardware. So we chose, in this example, an asymmetric software transaction memory implementation and could achieve by manual frequency scaling up to 50% speed up by using only 2% more energy. Of course, there are also trade-offs related to frequency scaling. The most important one is when the instructions per cycle depend on the frequency. So this can be the case when you have to wait for the memory, for example. The use case we had here was by looking at memcached D when it is currently doing a hash table resize. We could achieve only a 9% speed up, but had to use 22% higher frequency. We also investigate a little bit further what the properties are when we have one core boosted constantly and delegate the execution of critical sections to that core. And here we found that we somewhat trade the latency from the frequency scaling towards the latency of communication between the cores. So when you communicate between two modules, the round trip is 2,000 cycles, so there is no shared L2 cache. But within the module, when there is a shared L2 cache, it can be as low as 280 cycles, and also scales with the P state. So this is only a teaser. There is much more information about it in the paper. And thanks for your attention.
Hi, Xiao Zhang from Google. 4 or 5 years ago, when I played with DVFS, I found that if I just lower down the frequency on one package, and the remote another package performance could be affected because of cache snooping protocol. So I don't know whether you observe this side effect in your new platform or this has been solved by hardware.
The caching impact can happen when the data is cached in a remote module. The L2 cache, for example, and you want to access another module. So here the problem is that the L2 cache scales with the P state. The L3 cache on AMD runs always at the same speed, but this issue you can see when you have cores at different speeds and the data still resides in the
So in another word, it could be the problem still exists in today's platform?
This problem still exists, yeah.
Okay, thanks.